previously on Worlds Away.
I and the 37 other research staff assigned to Kairos 5 are currently prisoners of the Front for an Independent Verge. You must immediately deflect asteroid 72 Hamilton away from Kairos and its orbit.
So what's our role here? We're not deflecting the asteroid, are we?
Charlie's stealth systems should allow us to land on the planet undetected. No technology that we had, including our scanners, was able to detect the Ghost ship when it was properly stealthed.
About your sister and the other hostages, can they defend themselves, fight if they need to?
I mean, maybe some of them can, but against armed attackers, I don't know if they're going to be much help.
Kairos is about a light year further from Ascension Station than Satis. 2.5-3 days to get there gives us a solid 3 days once we make planetfall. We've had worse odds.
All right, well, we should head out as soon as possible then, right?
Arno immediately takes out the pistol from his sidearm, from his holster, and tosses it to her, wordlessly.
Oh, man.
No one better for a hostage recovery situation?
They really didn't train us on catching the gun, Arno.
It might be nice to have someone who knows the planet. I'm not saying it's not a risk.
I'm in agreement.
If it's the consensus of the group to take her with us, then that's what we should do. But I have a feeling she'll turn into a liability. And not because she can't catch a gun.
Arno, can I talk to you for a minute? Do you mind putting down the sponge?
Yes, of course.
What gives them the right to close themselves off? You're not supposed to be able to just say, I'm done, and I leave. It's not the way this works.
These things are the actions of people in dire circumstances, making bad decisions. But they are not in any way Aventine or unique to Aventine. They're just people.
Whose landscape is this?
The figures look identical between the two paintings. But on yours, the figure has a shadow. And that shadow is the shape of the monster. And that is missing from Arno's painting. And so my question to you, Leela, is do you fill in the shadow?
I think Leela steps up and adds the shadow of the monster on Arno's painting.
Roll plus alien.
That's a 9. Yeah.
Suggestion. On a 10 plus, you can choose one from the list. But on a 7-9, you choose one, but they will soon realize you messed with their head.
I'm going to convince Arno that the being that I interacted with in Nadia's mind, I think Leela believes that that was a being from a species called the Travelers. And I think she wants to convince Arno of that fact as well.
I think the way that the suggestion manifests is what we saw was Leela go up and paint in the shadow. But after that was done, what Arno remembers is he painted the shadow.
Oh, shit.
Oh, fuck.
Welcome to Worlds Away, an actual play storytelling podcast. I am your game master, John Ossop, and here with me we've got Adley Daria.
Hello, hello.
Lauren Wilbanks.
Haunting.
Michael Morales.
Hello.
And Moshatara.
Claire, it's French.
Sorry, did you say Aidley, Daria?
No, I don't think so.
Oh,
no.
That's what I heard. That's what I heard. I'm sorry. I was very confused.
I'm fairly sure that. I didn't.
Listen, if you start smelling burnt toast, please let me know.
I was yawning before this, so I don't know. It's not a good sign.
It wasn't your best, Haley, but okay. Wow.
It wasn't your best.
I mean, we were all thinking it, but...
Damn.
Let's do it again. Let's just take another take. We got plenty of time.
Haley, Daria. There, now we can spice it in. All right, so last time we ended with... you engaging the stealth system on the Valiant and entering orbit around Kairos, which is an inhospitable planet that hosts a Republic research station. Now, from your briefing, that station has currently been occupied by separatists who want to claim Kairos as their own and who want you to stop an asteroid from impacting the planet, which would, if it is not stopped, kill them, the researchers they've taken hostage, and much of the other life on this planet. Now, I think I know the answer to this from your previous discussions, but what I want to know at this point is, where does the Valiant go next? And the choices that I see are going to this orbital supply platform currently around Kairos, which is what Dr. Stone identified as, along with the Valiant, sort of the only tool that you might be able to use to stop the asteroid, or you can head down to the surface in an attempt to get everyone off the planet before the impact. So let me know where you're going, and then we can play out what comes next.
Yeah, I think where we left off last time was that we were going to try to get to the surface.
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't seem like going to stop the asteroid is going to be super fruitful for us. I don't know. I think what Leela thinks is trying to stop the asteroid would be accepting defeat, that we can't get these people off of the planet. And yeah.
So is that, is that the consensus?
Yeah.
Yeah.
In that case, I guess my sort of follow-up question is there anything else that you do on the Valiant before heading down to the planet, or do you just go straight there?
Yeah. So I think after that indexing session that I just had,
That did happen last episode.
There's a couple things I want to play out, but the thing that I want to do is, I think when we last met to plan through the meeting, Arno was undeniably in a funk. And I think coming out of the session, something clicked for him that this is just a bad plan. And we need to fix this plan so that it works and so that it's good. And I think there's just been like a jolt to Arno's system that like, there's purpose and he needs to do something very quickly, and that there's an opportunity for this plan to go really, really well if he acts like now.
I mean, I didn't think it was a terrible plan.
Yeah.
That's okay. You didn't need to think that it was a terrible plan. Arno knows it's a terrible plan.
I'm going to like respect the fact that there's divisions between Mike and Mike's character and not have to have a conversation later about the way he treats fellow PCs.
Can I just say, someone recently asked me, one of our fans recently asked me, so I feel like I should know this by now, but are Mike and Lauren together? And I was like, yes.
The answer is always, we'll see.
it's most unsure whenever we're recording.
It does get a little contentious at times.
We shake the eight ball and it's been a good streak so far.
Yeah, love you too.
All right, so how is Arno fixing what he... a plan that I'll politely say has come to question, I guess.
Yeah. So maybe it's just a eureka moment, like on the bridge. And it's like, we're getting ready to land on the planet. I think Arno says, oh, this isn't going to work.
I'm sorry?
This plan. No, this isn't going to work.
Arno, we've talked about this for hours.
I know. And it's a really terrible plan. I can't believe I'm just realizing it now.
I think Leela rolls her eyes a little bit.
Yeah. Let's skip over the part where we're offended that you're just now coming to a realization and jump to your suggestions, Lieutenant Hines.
Well, the problem is that we're trying to covertly break into this facility, and we've done nothing to force these captors to maintain any sort of routine. They don't know how long they're waiting for anything right now. They don't need to worry about taking shifts to wait this out for a certain number of days or come up with any sort of schedule to guard this base and all of their hostages. And part of that is because we haven't communicated to them that they have something that they need to wait for.
Are you saying that the hole in the plan is that we haven't communicated parts of a plan to, or at least a fake plan, to the... I don't understand what you're saying.
I'm saying that we need to reach out to them immediately and negotiate as if we were taking this seriously and like we weren't trying to break in and steal all of the hostages before it's too late.
A solid point.
Okay, we need to lay out the bait.
Dr. Bolivar, if we were going to try to communicate with the base, is there a way for you to reroute the signal so that it looks like it's coming from Satis or from the direction of Satis?
Easy.
Okay, excellent. Let's do this. Patch me in.
All right, so are you doing this right from the bridge? Or?
Right there, right, just jumping right into it.
Okay.
I want to name Esmo that we did have Satis communicating with the hostages already. Like, yeah. That is a thing that we did do.
Yeah. You had the president tell, like, and her people tell them that you were sending a ship from Satis. That was what was communicated. So.
Yeah, and, like, supplies. So there has been communication with the hostages that something is coming, or with the hostage takers, that something is coming, right? Just to clarify.
Yeah, but they had a couple of different demands here, and so far one of them is that we're sending you supplies. But, like, the thing that I think is missing from all of this is expressing the terms, because so far they've told us what they want, but we haven't told them any of what we want, which is presumably all of the hostages, right? And it's like, we're going to give you something, and I feel like what needs to happen right now is a conversation wherein, like, we set the standards for, like, you better be serious about releasing those hostages.
Yeah, I got you.
And just so I understand the kind of setting where this is happening, so is the Valiant in orbit in stealth mode right now, and this is happening, and you're kind of waiting to descend to the planet until after you make this call?
Yeah.
And you're just, like, calling as, obviously, Arno Hines wearing the fleet uniform, or what's Arno wearing on this call?
That's a great question. So Arno hasn't put his fleet uniform back on yet. He came into the room without that on, and I think he realizes that he's not wearing a jacket. And he looks over at Nasir and just says, let me borrow this for a second, and I'm going to try to take your Minerva Project jacket.
I'll give it to him.
And put it on.
Okay.
You own one of these, Lieutenant Hines.
I just want to say, in the background, Mara has pulled out her scanner. And if I need to roll something, I want to check what the fuck is up with Arno Hines. I think this should just be flavor, but Mara is concerned / confused.
Do we know that Arno indexed with Leela?
I don't think we told you.
I don't think so.
Got it.
I mean, I'll say this, Lauren, I'm fine just leaving that as flavor, and I don't see how the scan, like, I think it's funnier for flavor with the scanner. If you actually want to rule to see if Mara notices something, I would allow that, but I think that otherwise I'm fine with it just being the flavor. Either way, the scanner says he's A-okay.
Yeah, so. It was like a heart rate, you know.
Yeah.
Body temperature.
Elevated, but in normal range.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. So I think maybe you're tapping away, Mara, to kind of set up this faked call signal.
VPN-esque.
Yeah.
Space VPN.
Space VPN.
Starlink. Damn it, that's taken.
So I think what this actually is helping Arno. And so okay. I think that you should roll lean on me, and I don't think that the consequence is going to be like immediate for this, but I think I want to see how that succeeds, and then that might affect if and when Arno rolls during the scene what might happen there.
And this is stalwart.
Yeah, I was trying to think if it was like act quick or something like that, but I just think it's more like narratively you're helping.
Yeah,
and not the hacking and cracking part.
Okay, so that is a robust 7.
Okay.
Woo!
So 7, woo! Mixed success. You can choose one option from the list, and that's your efforts help them. They have advantage going forward. Your support brings relief and they can clear a stress. Or you aren't pushed to your limits or exposed to danger or complication for your efforts.
I will give him advantage.
Okay. Which means that you're kind of on the hook if something goes wrong, I think, during this scene. All right, so Arno has advantage going forward. And I think that maybe it takes you a few seconds of tapping, but eventually there's a connection. Arno, I think that you see that you're on video sort of in the normal way that you would expect a call to go, right? But on the other hand, there's no video signal going back to you. So it seems like there's an audio-only connection from the planet. I think you hear a voice on the other end of the line, but that voice is sort of distorted. So it sounds like it's being put through a voice changer or being intentionally messed with in some way. So sort of like in the movies when you hear someone on the other end of the line and it's like they don't want to be identified. And you hear that voice say,
"I was beginning to think the Republic was content on letting dozens of its citizens die."
"This is Lieutenant Arno Hines of the Minerva Project. Who am I addressing?"
"You can call me Adam."
"Adam, we are complying with your demands. If you check the scanners, you'll see a ship inbound from Satis. That ship will intercept the meteor and also has the supplies needed for yourselves and the hostages."
"And when exactly is this ship expected to arrive? You're cutting it pretty close with dozens of lives."
"Before we get into logistics, Adam, I need to know that I'm dealing with someone serious. You get the supplies and we save every life on the planet. In exchange, you release half of the hostages when you receive the supplies."
I think go ahead and roll manipulate.
And I get advantage.
And you can do it with advantage because of Mara's help.
Yeah. That is a
plus zero.
Oh.
Oh, that's a four.
Ugh. Ooh. You have no plus on that at all.
That is a plus zero.
I'm glad I helped. It would have been a three without your help.
Go ahead and mark XP.
Oof. Love that.
I love the disappointment in my SM's tone.
Lauren gets no XP and the black consequence.
I think it's just that what the consequence is a little bit different. Damn. This is a tough one to fail, y'all. I was really hoping to give you this.
Have them execute a hostage.
Is that what you want? Is that Lauren? Or
blood for the blood god.
Oh, no.
I actually don't know what the OG... Is that like Warhammer? I have no idea.
What a terrible roll to fail.
Oh, it is Warhammer. Okay.
Yeah, it's blood for the blood god. Was it skulls for the skull god?
There doesn't need to be more. Seems
yeah,
lame.
That made it
There's
worse,
more.
Actually.
Skulls for the skull throne. That's what the other half is.
Okay, that's better.
So what I think happens is, after you say that, Arno, I don't think the response that you get is any sort of stern rejection. What I think you get is,
"You're in no position to dictate terms, not until you stop the asteroid. I need to know that you're serious. And once that's done, then we can discuss the hostages and your terms. Until then, we have nothing to speak about."
And the line cuts off. I think what we see, though, is a shot of that same screen that we saw at the end of the last episode, where someone was sort of looking at the like sensor display, and it was like, oh, he said for almost a second, it was like as if the Valiant was going to show up on there, and then it kind of disappeared when it went into stealth mode. I don't think we see anything showing that the Valiant has lost its stealth, but I think there's a little box that pops up that says incoming communication information and has a bunch of lines of code and text. And I think we see the person there holding their hand up to call someone over to the screen.
Uh-oh.
And that is what happens off camera.
Well, there goes the element of surprise.
Perhaps. I don't know if that's the same thing.
So I think Leela says, "Well, that could have gone better."
"I think there's still an opportunity here. We should still make landfall. We should still proceed with our end of the mission, but we should instruct the ship from Satis to make double time."
"Can I have my jacket back?"
"Oh, it's very comfortable. Are they all like this?"
"Yes."
"Sure. And I'm gonna take off the jacket and hand it to Nasir. But as he pulls it back, I think I just hold on for a second longer."
Amazing. All right. I feel like that's the scene. Is there anything else that happens on the Valiant before the ship enters the atmosphere?
I think it's the four of us in the wardroom for just a sec, if nobody minds.
No, I have something to do, so I think I would appreciate that, actually.
Do we have an alternative plan in case things go wrong? One for dealing with the asteroid?
The ship coming with supplies is, in fact, not a bluff. This is something we requested.
Mm-hmm.
Is its ability to destroy the asteroid a bluff? or in a pinch, could it do the job?
My understanding is that was a bluff. There was at least nothing that was said earlier to make it so that ship could destroy the asteroid.
Right.
I think that what you were kind of told by Dr. Stone, by Danica Stone, was you could use the reactor on this orbital platform. And if that sort of like went critical or exploded, that could stop the asteroid. So you would need something, whether it's the Valiant or this other ship, to reposition that in the asteroid's path. But, you know, that seems to be the only way that's at your immediate disposal. There could be other stuff I'm not thinking of, or like you could use part of the Valiant to do something, or maybe there is a way to do that by destroying this ship or something like that. But that's, I don't think there's tools on this. You know, the Armageddon rig is not also packed on this ship in addition to the supplies. Gotcha.
Well, that seems like a lack of foresight.
I think it might have been hard to like put that together from a civilian ship anyways.
Exactly. You know? Yeah. I don't think Satis has like military.
I was mostly being ironic.
But we could theoretically put together something to stop the asteroid from here.
That's true. I think it depends on the timing.
I think Leela says, if all four of us go down to Kairos, then I don't think there's much we can do about the asteroid. Am I missing something?
I mean, the crew of the Valiant, the esteemed doctor herself who created the plan, surely they could actually destroy the asteroid, or at least position themselves to be able to do so if given the signal. I know it would be a terrible waste of research, but in case of emergency, it would be nice to have the option.
It would make this less of a suicide mission.
It's not like we have to take the Valiant into the base with us.
I don't see that we lose much, frankly, other than our ability for a quick getaway. And even then, we have to take the entire team miles away for extraction if we're trying to get away without being noticed or without seizing full control of the facility. So it wouldn't be that quick anyway.
So I think Mara will kind of bring up the schematic of the base and the orbital, like, and the shuttles and the kind of the whole system. And she'll kind of outline in detail, if we can somehow modify the shuttle to support all of these individuals, keep breathable air, vac suits would make this a better situation, but then also prohibit any terrorist from modifying our ability to reach the top of the orbital platform. This might be a better plan than an extended hostile hike.
To your point about the weakness of our plan, Arno, biggest weakness I see is that, frankly, we only had one plan. Get in, take over the entire facility without losing anyone, get the hostages out, and then escort them through the front door onto the Valiant. If any part of that goes wrong, we're stuck in hostile territory with an asteroid barreling towards the planet and several hostages. I think it's best to create as many alternatives as possible. I like Dr. Belova's plan to have a quick getaway if possible.
Assuming we're able to go up the platform uninterrupted. If we're stuck, we're stuck.
Sure, but at least we are away from the individuals with guns and closer to the Valiant.
I misspoke. It's not just that we're stuck. If they decide to rip a hole in the thing, then it's us against the atmosphere, or lack thereof, depending on how high we get.
I would be surprised if I had the capabilities to damage the system in such a egregious way. This isn't a military facility, by all accounts. And we do know they have firearms, but ballistics that can tear open a metal hull? How likely is that?
Frankly, we don't really know how they took over the facility. Your guess is as good as mine.
Regardless, the quick escape route is one potential solution that we have access to. Better to discuss these things ahead of time than to be stuck figuring them out in the firefight. So options: take over the facility and go out the front door. Options: sneak everyone out and take the long hike. Option: we get everyone to an escape bay and ferry them out as stealthily as possible. Option four, if it all goes tits up, we blow up the asteroid.
I think at Arno's comment, Mara pulls up the initial video that we were shown of the researcher that was forced to read the kind of manifesto.
I assume that Danica is not in the room, but this is the video.
No, it's just the four
sister.
Of us, right? Yeah. So in the video, we talked a lot about like this kind of constellation that's a part of their flag, but there was also a kind of description of a tattoo or some sort of something that the researcher had on her hand. Can I like scope that out?
You said it was of the soul system, yeah?
No, I did not. I said it was of a soul. Well, if I said solar system, that was probably unclear for our sci-fi setting, but I meant it was of a star system. I'm trying to think if you have to roll for this. I guess, what are you trying to figure out? And then I'll see if you have to roll for this, if I can just tell you. Because I think you can see the video, you know what I mean?
I guess it's just like, can I run an analysis and pick out what it's representing? And if there's any information on that system that might have some sort of nugget of helpfulness.
Yeah, so I don't think you have to roll for that at all. I think looking at it and just from your studying of the system, you believe, Mara, that this is a representation of the planets and other bodies in the Kairos system, in this system itself.
Mm.
Which stands to reason, given the fact that that was where she was, you know, stationed as a scientist. So I don't think that's a surprise to you, but it's not of another place in the Verge. It's not of the Earth, of the Sol system, even though I said solar system last time.
Gotcha.
All right. We have a couple of options. None of them great. Any other plans? Excellent. I'll notify Captain Alba of our hopes for the Valiant and its crew.
What about Dr. Stone?
Well, we're not bringing her with us, right?
There's no reason she can't assist Charlie in the calculations for destroying an asteroid. Frankly, she might be better at them than they are.
I agree.
Though, I never would doubt Charlie.
All right, is that the scene or anything else?
No, sounds good.
Yep.
So I think at this point you're back on the bridge with Captain Alba. I think also there are Lieutenants Davis and Rye and Danica Stone. Mara, I don't think you have to roll for this either way, but just in terms of painting the scene here, do you think that you're flying the Valiant in, or is Lieutenant Rye at the stick?
I think it's Lieutenant Rye, just because I think that Mara would be double checking and triple checking the spacesuit. And doing analysis on, okay, we've been told that the atmosphere is inhospitable. What does that actually mean? Can our spacesuits, like, is there like some sort of time period that we're looking for? Like if it's over 5 hours exposure, 10 or 20 hours, whatever, is there a point where we need to get inside no matter what or seek shelter coverage? I think that's what she's fixated on right now.
So I think maybe you're at the sensor station just checking the readings, but out the windscreen, I think where we cut into the scene, we see the kind of fiery glow of reentry. So the ship is currently entering the atmosphere. And after a few seconds, those sort of flames and glow fade away. And I think you'd normally then expect to see something out the window like you have every other time that you've landed on the planet. But here, once you enter the atmosphere, the cloud cover is so thick that all you can see out of the window is this red-orange soup, which is occasionally lit by streaks of what looks like lightning. And then maybe after a few seconds, there's a brighter flash, and that highlights some faint shadows in the distance. So maybe denser parts of the clouds, or maybe something moving through them. And I think that we see that Lieutenant Rye is navigating on instruments only to sort of get through this and get to the landing site that Dr. Stone identified. After 5 minutes or so of descending through this sort of ubiquitous cloud cover, I think there's a millisecond of light, but then you're back in the clouds for several more seconds before finally sort of passing through and breaking out of the bottom of this cloud cover. And below the Valiant, you can then see a jagged, rocky terrain with sharp cliffs jutting out from the ground. It's almost as if the whole planet dried up and started to crack around you. But following the instructions from Dr. Stone, after another minute or so of flying, you can see a small plateau in the distance, which is just large enough to comfortably fit the Valiant. As the ship settles down on the surface there, I think there's a second's pause after the landing gear touches down, but then there is a disconcerting shake as the ground slightly shifts below the ship. But after another moment or two, things seem to settle down, and the only noise that you can hear seems to be the ship's engines winding down, along with the muted sound of wind blowing outside the Valiant. So, Mara, you mentioned that you were kind of looking for the sensors about the atmosphere, correct?
Mm-hmm, yeah.
So I think I do want you to go ahead and roll scope it out. Let me just check the description of the ship's sensors, though.
Nice.
So I think looking at that rule, the sensors have some special things that they give you when you're scanning a ship or station, but anytime you're using it, it gives you advantage to scope it out. So you can go ahead and roll scope out with advantage.
Hell yeah.
All right. 7, 8, 9.
So on a 9, it's a mixed success, and you can ask one question from the scope it out list.
I think the most general one here would probably be the best. What should I be on the lookout for?
Okay. So I think you get two things from that then. And your primary question was, how will the atmosphere affect your vac suits? Is that sort of the main crux of what you're getting at here?
Yeah, it's a lot about like, how do we make sure we survive? No surprises out there.
Yeah. Okay. So I think on the suit question, I think that you're detecting several corrosive compounds in the atmosphere, things that would break down the seals or other kind of joints of the vac suit. And so I think unless you're replacing the vac suit or have something specially built for this environment, I think you could expect that the longer that it's exposed to the outside environment, the weaker these things become until they would eventually break. And then if that atmosphere gets in the suit, you're having a really bad time. And from your readings, I think that you determine that a few hours outside would probably be safe, but anything past that, you're going to risk the suit failing and letting the outside air in. And I'll sort of get to how we're going to play with that once we leave the Valiant. In terms of the other thing that you detect, I don't think that you have a specific reading, and I think that the density of the atmosphere is substantial in terms of interference with the sensors, but I think that you're detecting far in the distance movement that looks like it could be from life forms on this planet, both in the air and on the ground.
Mm-hmm. I think that the thing that I really want to do with that last piece of information is be able to have that happening in real time, right? Being able to sense the creepy crawlies before they get to us. That's my desire, putting it out there. I do have the scanner on me, right? And so if we want to have a use of that, whatever we need to do.
Okay, I really like that. And I think I know how I'm going to deal with that. So I think go ahead and mark off that you have the scanner on you. So use the gear slot. Don't mark off a use yet. I think that you have it on kind of like passive reading mode. And I think I'll give you a chance to see if it detects something at an opportune time because of this. So I think that that is how you have it set up. Not saying there won't be dice involved in that, but I think that you have that on you and it's sort of actively reading. Anything else that you say to each other, or do you head out of the bridge at this point?
I think time's of the essence.
In that case, I think as you're walking out the bridge, Danica Stone holds up a hand and says, "Wait, I appreciate you sticking up for me with your director back on Ascension, but you're making a mistake to leave me on the ship. I know the planet, I know the outpost, and I know the people. Even if you make it there without any problems along the way, having me there with you gives us the best shot of getting everyone out alive."
Why?
"Seeing everything myself in real time, being there to react, you can't do that over comms. You know that.
You can't react to a combat situation for the first time in quite real time. I understand that you have expertise of the situation, but your knowledge of the base and its current structure is more useful to us while you're not being shot at than being in the direct line of fire.
Do the rest of you all kind of signal agreement to this, or what's the vibe that she's picking up?
Oh, I completely agree.
Yeah.
And I think she can read that on my face.
Yeah, I'm nodding.
I think Leela's going to step forward and say, Dr. Stone, I understand how difficult this must be for you. But sometimes the best thing we can do is to play our role. And I think your role, the way that you can best serve your sister and everyone else down there on Kairos, is by staying here on the ship.
So I think she takes a deep breath in, but then lets out a sort of long half sigh. And then she says, fine. As I said, you're making a mistake, but if helping from here is the only way I can, I'll do whatever I can do to help get her back, to get all of them back.
Hey there, it's Mike. Thank you so much for listening to Worlds Away. It's been an absolute blast making the show and inspiring so much future fan fiction. If you're enjoying Worlds Away so far, you can help us out by spreading the word to friends, family, and coworkers you corner at the water cooler. We're relying entirely on word of mouth to advertise, so this is the number one way to help support the show. And if you've already talked about us to everyone you know and want another way to support us, you can also rate and review us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or any other platform you use to listen to podcasts. You can also give us a shout out on social media on most platforms at Worlds Away Pod or at our website, worldsawaypod.com. Thanks again for listening, and now back to the episode.
I think the next shot is from outside the Valiant, and after a few seconds, we hear a metallic clunk and then a hiss as the lift descends from the vehicle bay into the orange-tinted air of this planet. Within a few seconds of the lift lowering, as it's still carrying you down to the ground, I think three of you start to hear a faint fizzing sound from the joints in your suits. It's sort of like the sound of hydrogen peroxide bubbling, or maybe putting a drop of vinegar in baking soda. And so what I want all four of you to do is go ahead and check off a gear slot. And just for this mission, if you don't have one already, go ahead and add a vac suit to your inventory. Now, Arno, you took the vac suit as one of your upgrades. And so I think yours, which we've described as this special military one, is resistant to the atmosphere here. But for the other three of you on that vac suit, I want you to check off one of the uses that it comes with. And you'll check off more of them as the suits are exposed to the atmosphere here. And I think that's how we'll resolve the sort of time limit that we discussed, Lauren.
Mm.
At this point, though, as the platform reaches the ground and there's a kind of thunk as it touches the terrain, I think you can hear Dr. Stone's voice coming through the comms. And you hear,
Arno, Mara, Leela, Nasir, can you read me?
Copy.
It's a little hard to see, but I have video. You'll want to head northeast from your current position, about 40 degrees on your compass. Not saying it will be smooth sailing, but the terrain's relatively stable there. Should be your best shot at getting to the old access tunnel.
Understood. Thank you, Doctor.
So as you move away from the Valiant, the terrain quickly becomes harder to navigate. Even the level areas here are extremely rocky, such that you're always checking your footing, and every few hundred feet you encounter a sharp rise or drop in elevation. And throughout all of this, there's a constant, only slightly muffled sound of the wind through your suits, in addition to that fizzing sound I mentioned earlier. At this point, though, I want to turn it over to you and ask, what kind of stuff are we seeing as we navigate through this terrain? In terms of some constraints, I do want to paint this planet as pretty rough. It's definitely the least hospitable place we've been to so far, but I don't think that means there's not life here. I mean, we detected some on the sensors, but it just, whatever we're describing, I think it has to have adapted to deal with these conditions. And so with that caveat, you're welcome to describe some of the life we see here. So sort of like what we did on Feronia or on Eos, but also you can describe the landscape or other features that you're seeing on this journey. So just what did we think that looks like?
Off mic for a sec, you said it was the planet was red and rocky. Is there anything else that you've given us?
I think there's the atmosphere has an orange tint to it, super thick cloud cover. Rocky is in very high degrees of elevation change, a lot of like sheer cliffs that you're seeing around you. So sort of like Canyon Mars, but with Venus-like clouds.
So I think one of the things we see is like some of the plant life. Like I'm envisioning kind of something a little cacti-like. So maybe low to the ground and very spiny. I'm imagining kind of like a muted green color, almost grayish. And I don't think these plants are particularly creating a lot of energy here. It seems like they're more just kind of hardy or tough type of plants. So maybe low to the ground and kind of small.
And I guess one question I have is, and the answer to this can be no, but is there anything about these, you know, we describe them as plants or cacti, but obviously this is a very different evolutionary tree from what we have on Earth. Is there anything about them that makes them sort of truly alien or different from what we see on Earth? Like, is there any kind of movement or any sort of aspects of these plants that differ from what we would see in a cactus or other plant life on Earth?
You know, it's funny. I was so close to saying this and then I was like, is it too much? But I think they look like they're kind of creeping against the ground. So maybe there is more of a mold-like element to their, you know, roots and kind of like kind of spreading across the ground. And then when they grow up a little bigger, then they form like the cacti part of it. That's a little bit more, you know, tougher with the spines.
I like that a lot. All right, Lauren, I saw you about to jump in.
Yeah, I think in regards to like multicellular life or like animals, I guess, because I don't know, this mold cactus is probably multicellular. I think it's pretty sparse, right? I do think that we see some sort of like crab creature.
Everyone's got to have a crab.
You literally took mine.
Oh. Your heart? Yeah, I know.
It's because evolution always leads to crabs.
Oh, it was going to be crabs.
I was going to say snake. I was going to say snake. And then
don't
I was
worry.
Like.
I got our reptiles covered. Okay. Don't worry about that.
But I do kind of want to put something down. So I think that we see like a little crab like thing scurry away. But one of the ways that it's distinctly different than crabs on Earth is that I think it has this kind of like gill structure that you can see. Ooh. And I think more often than not, the creatures on this planet would have some sort of a special breathing apparatus that I'm imagining is gill like.
I like that a lot. Can I ask how big these things are? Are they kind of smaller or like...
The gills?
Earth size? No, the crabs themselves.
The crabs. I say about like hand size.
Ooh. Okay.
They have to be visible, right? And again, like if they're, it's few and far between, but we see a big honker kind of scurry around.
I think we see probably... We probably from where we're standing only see like two or three of these anywhere in sight and they sort of blend in. But are you guys familiar with Panoplosaurus, the dinosaur? The one that sort of has like the plates and the like spikes along its back.
Yes.
I was a train kid.
Fair. Train kids are valid, as are space kids. I was a space and dinosaur kid.
I'm sure this is one of the ones from Land Before Time, but I'm not sure which one it was.
So I'm thinking like probably spike, but I'm thinking like a Panoplosaurus type deal, like a spiked armadillo, but like roughly dog size. And I think that they're like probably like chewing on this moss. I think that they're like very clearly herbivores. And like they very clearly subsist on like the basic like moss that grows around here. But they are like covered in spikes to like wait off any predators that might exist.
And the spikes are crystals.
And the spikes are crystals.
I'm sorry. No, it's not.
I was going to say, I think they're red and black. Like their colorage is like a blending of red and black that makes them sort of blend with the rocks and the dirt. And if we look closely, we probably see one of them like curl up and roll away as like a ball of spikes.
Nice. Oh, wow.
Little Sonic dinosaur.
Little Sonic dinosaur.
Shadow the dinosaur.
Pretty much.
Today I learned that Panoplosauruses and Ankylosauruses are not the same thing.
Yeah.
They look pretty similar.
They do. They really do.
But the rolling up in a ball and rolling away is very Hemsworth coded, but that's fine.
It is.
Mike, we're just stalling for time now.
I'm still trying to recover from Lauren stealing my crabs.
You could just have some sort of living rock.
I think lumbering in the distance.
Oh, no.
We see something that's definitely going to go murder Mara.
Writes furiously in Game Master.
I did canonically make a dog-sized herbivore that has some sort of predator, right? Like, that exists. You could make the predator.
Wait. Oh, I definitely didn't notice that, Mo. Don't worry.
But Mike can create it, so you don't have to.
Oh, thanks, bud.
I just think I should be recognized for choosing to not make it a gator.
I do recognize that.
I did think that as soon as you came up with your suggestion. I was like, oh, it's not a gator.
I do want to name, I think the spikes are also, they look like rock. So if these things are like laying down, they just look like a red and black rock fixture that sort of blends.
That's so cute.
They're very much like a, I want to eat my moss and not get fucked with type of animal.
I think in the distance, we can see something that looks like a bird, but it's not flying. It's perched. And it's roughly 7 feet tall. And what you see it do is throw itself from the perch and land, but you don't actually see it fly back up. You see it hop back up to its perch after it gets its prey.
Hmm.
And I'm not sure that this atmosphere is hospitable to flight anymore, but it can definitely glide.
Okay.
And also dive very quickly.
Okay. I hate that, just so you know.
I know, because you hate Kaelid.
I do hate Kaelid. It was very Kaelid coded.
I would like to create an ant.
No, don't you dare. I don't know why the giant insects freak me out.
You don't have to. I'm just making a joke. Like, your phobia is valid as much as you want it to be valid. I am just going to use your pain as like a joke device for myself.
Mm-hmm. That's fair.
Valid. I feel like that's been as well established in this friend group.
All right. So I think we're seeing these, the mold cactus and then also these three creatures either near where you're walking or in the case of the gliding bird off in the distance. But as you're moving through this landscape, I want to ask, is there any conversation happening along the way, or else what does it look like as each of you is sort of navigating the terrain here?
Yeah, I think there is conversation, but I'm curious, how do we think we are proceeding? Like, do we think someone's out front? Is Arno maybe, I don't know, who's the most familiar with like trekking?
I think it would be Arno. But I think he would take the rear,
mm-hmm.
just in case anything like tried to ambush us from behind or something to that effect. I think I would be better positioned to react to that. And being able to keep all three of you in my line of sight would also just be helpful.
So who's like navigating or leading us?
I mean, I would posit me.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah. And maybe Mara, you have the sensor
exactly.
out or kind of being on the lookout.
Yeah, I think she's looking out for animals like we talked about, but I think also like any random, like, do they get flash floods here? Do they get fucking toxic storms or something? Like,
yeah.
I think I've probably got like my futuristic Google Glass bar over my eyes, like over my brow. And every once in a while, I just put it in binoculars mode.
Mm.
It's not like a scanner, but it's like binoculars. Like,
yeah. I mean, I think, and it's like you have the vac suit on and I think you right. also have like the heads up display and the helmet and sort of all of those tools. So yeah, you're definitely checking out in the distance.
I think maybe Leela's in the middle of the pack. And as we're trekking across this rocky terrain and taking in kind of the different life forms, I think the gears in Leela's mind are turning a little bit. And I think she looks over to Mara, who's, you know, maybe doing some scanny boops. And she says, so what's going to happen to all of this if the asteroid hits?
I think Mara looks up and she's kind of jarred back into reality. Maybe her brain hasn't caught up, so she kind of quickly answers, I assume it'll all be obliterated.
I think Mara's kind of, you know, almost flippant tone is hits Leela a little bit. And then she says, it didn't seem like much from up above, but there's a lot of life here. I don't know. Maybe this happens all the time. I'm sure to lots of places where there's life, but imagining all this gone, it's something.
For what it's worth, this is the first time this is happening in observable space during our lifetimes. On a planet we could reach, that is.
It really makes me feel a bit insignificant.
I think after this, like, I say what I say, there's like a moment where something like clicks in my head. Frankly, we're sort of setting a precedent.
What do you mean?
Well, this has never happened before at a time and place where we could stop it, or frankly, even observe it with deep research. Making the decision that we shouldn't interfere, we're making that decision on behalf of the species. History will remember this moment, and will remember our choice.
I also spoke too soon. It's not as if the asteroid is truly just going to blow a hole through the center of this planet and some sort of explosion happens. Nothing like that. It'll be a transformation. Like all things in life are transformations. All life will, some suddenly and some slowly, fade. But there's a strong possibility that what happened on our planet will happen here. Some life is eradicated and new life emerges.
I suppose I took it for granted that letting the asteroid hit was the right thing to do. That there's something pure and righteous about the course of the universe, but it's all just a bit random, isn't it? That asteroid could have easily taken a 1 degree shift in its trajectory a million miles away and could pass this planet by altogether. It just doesn't feel quite so clear anymore. And I think Leela is kind of looking around the planet, maybe for the first time, seeing it not as this kind of, you know, noxious, inhospitable place, but its own ecosystem and its own, like, seeing it for its own order. And I think there's just a little bit of a new appreciation in her eyes for what surrounds them. Even the weird, gross mold cacti.
Let me ask this. How is Arno reacting to this, if at all?
I'm not really sure, and I'm really struggling with it. I think that Arno is sort of conflicted here and is struggling with this because, on the one hand, this could happen anywhere, and it does happen in a lot of different places, and it doesn't really change what their actual situation on the ground is. But there's something tugging at him on the back of his head that's just saying there's an opportunity to stop a force of the universe and preserve life. You should take it.
Mm.
And he's getting pulled into that thought more than to that of his training or his original position that, like, if the meteor hit, the meteor hit. And I think he likes it. I think he likes that he's getting pulled in that direction. And he's, like, almost joyously trying to, like, lean into that. But he keeps it to himself because he's not sure how to describe those two thoughts to the group.
Hmm.
And I think he just keeps it to himself.
So I think after maybe an hour or so of walking, climbing, which is far longer than it would have taken for you to travel the same distance almost anywhere else. You get to the edge of what I will describe as a basin. It seems like the sort of place that you'd have expected water to have gathered maybe thousands or millions of years ago. If you look to the right, I think you see a few outcroppings of rock sort of overlooking this basin. And maybe we see two of those like gliding bird creatures sort of resting on top of them. It seems like they're just kind of looking down into the basin, sort of monitoring. I don't know, Mike, if you described what kind of prey that they would look for. I mean, it seems like they went down to get something, but they're sort of looking down there. I don't know if we see anything at the bottom.
I don't think we were close enough to see what it was going for, but I can tell you that it was almost like controlling the descent with its claws outstretched in front and using the wings to sort of navigate and fine tune where it was landing more than anything else.
Yeah. So I don't think we see any of them pouncing, though. I think they're just sort of surveying is what we see at the edge of the basin. Far off in the distance, though, on the other side of the depression, we see a sharp near vertical cliff. And at the top of that, you can see the glint of light reflecting off of a metal structure. And I think you know that that is the research facility. Near you, though, there are a series of steps or progressions in the rock. Each of these is at least several feet tall, and you could probably use them to navigate down to the bottom of the basin, which is sort of where you have to go to make your way across to this cliff where the access tunnel is. So what I want to know is, how are you all tackling descending into the basin? Do you just sort of climb down these rocks one at a time, or do you think that you try some other method of getting down to the bottom?
I would like to use my jetpack.
I can't believe it's taken us 36 episodes to get to the classic D&D puzzle of how do you get down a cliff.
I want to come back to Lauren in a second, but go ahead and Mo, ask your question.
What is gravity like? In terms of G's?
I think the planet is a little bit larger. Maybe this kind of fits with the flight is difficult thing, Mike. I think the planet is a bit larger in terms of its size and mass than Earth is. I don't think it's like 2x, you know, but I think it's you can feel the additional weight on the surface. Maybe it's like 1.5 or, you know, 1.8. I don't know, somewhere around there.
So definitely not viable for like our like feet jets that we use in the vacuum.
Well, that's what I was going to say is, I mean, you have the sort of reaction control system on the suits, right? Or you have that. We mentioned that you can use that to sort of get around in space. I mean, I'm open to thinking that that could work to help you navigate down this cliff. I mean, it's kind of, what do you think? Does that work to arrest your, like, if you're going to take a hop down what would be like a 6-foot drop, could you use that to slow your fall? I'm kind of open to either conclusion.
And sorry, how deep is the thing that we're trying to get down?
So I think it's maybe like somewhere between 50 and 60 feet total. But there are these sort of steps where you're at, where each of them, you know, I think it ranges between 4 feet where you could kind of just slide down into it, or 9 or 10 feet where it's a little bit more of a drop. Nothing that you think if you fell, that would be a life ender, but it could be dangerous, especially if you're worried about the condition of your suits.
Yeah.
Yeah, I say using kind of the stability enabling system that we can use in the vacuum, I say that we try to employ that here.
Okay. Who's leading the descent down? Is it still Nasir?
I mean, I think so, right?
Okay.
I think it's still me.
All right. So I think if you're using the kind of the jets on the suit to sort of arrest the fall as much as possible, I mean, I think it's still like you hitting the ground with some force. It's not dropping onto pillows or anything given the gravity, but I think it makes it so you could, at least for the shorter ones, hop down without needing to kind of dangle or risk tearing the suit. But if you're leading that, I feel like this is probably an act quick, but I'd be open to other ideas for a role. But I want to see how you succeed at navigating this and leading the group through this terrain.
Sounds good. That is an 8 plus 3. That is an 11.
Oh, perfect. Woo! Okay.
Nice.
So I guess I'll turn it over to you. Can you describe what this looks like?
Yeah, so I think while not this terrain, I think we had quite a bit of uneven terrain to navigate. I think we sort of talked about this before, that there was like cliffs on Aventine that we saw in one of my flashbacks. And so I think that like the utilizing of like the control system, like the jet boots to mitigate a fall is actually something I've done before. And so it's just getting up to the, like right up to the ledge. And then it's like a light hop. And as soon as I take off, I'm like burning a fuel to sort of like push down as much as possible. And when you land, it's like a brace on bent knees and sort of roll forward a little bit on like the bigger ones. On the small ones, you just sort of eat it or like take it. But on the larger ones, it's just sort of like a forward roll if you have too much momentum so that you don't like break your legs.
So how do we think the other three of you, I don't want to make anyone else roll for this. I think that Nasir kind of showed you the way. But how do we think we see the other three of you faring at this experience of kind of using these jet boots to make your way down to the surface?
I think it takes Leela a couple tries to get the hang of it. But I think by the end, she's kind of figured out how to roll properly and is relying on her martial arts role to guide her there.
So maybe there's like a couple stumbles on the earlier ones that are steeper, but
exactly.
You know, yeah.
I think Mara is incredibly uneasy at it and looks terrified the whole time and trips a lot. I think she looks super ungraceful and it's embarrassing, except for the fact that she's the whole point of the mission is to fight off terrorists, which is pretty cool. So those kind of balance out.
Is that like what in her head she's like, we're going to get some terrorists.
Yeah.
You're exploring alien terrain and landscape to take out terrorists on a covert mission. You are so cool.
Yeah, but she like tripped and like would have skinned her knees, you know, if she wasn't wearing a suit. And she's, I think it's a little bit of like a, everyone's paying attention to their own like dismount. Nobody's looking at you. Just keep moving forward.
You're doing great, Dr. Belova.
You don't exist. You don't exist right now.
Maybe sing yourself, I'm a spy, do-do-do-do-do, I'm a spy.
No, that could be you. That could be, we finally found it, Arno's motivation.
I'm a soldier, not a spy.
That was one of the lines. Does Arno's suit have anything particularly cool for this scenario?
No.
Just the same kind of jets?
I think maybe the there's more texture on the palms to be able to grab surfaces a little more easily. That's about it.
The jets burn blue because blue is a cooler flame color.
I think like gecko technology.
Oh, the idea that like Arno just sort of slides down each surface with like one hand and one foot.
Oh, that's actually really cool. Damn.
That is really
cool.
You
didn't think of it, so it didn't happen.
That's how, if I had thought of it 2 minutes ago, that's how I would have gone down.
Nah, Nasir's not cool enough for that. We all know that.
That's totally what happens too. He's got like one hand free, so if he needs to react to anything, he can like reach his pistol and he's just kind of like sliding down.
So I think there's like maybe a little bit of dust or rocks that kind of get churned up from the slide. And I think that you all make it your way down to the bottom and Arno, you kind of slide down. Maybe at this point, Nasir, you're already leading the group a little bit away from the rock face and are heading off into the distance. I think, however, you're kind of looking around and surveying the area again. And you notice that those two creatures that I mentioned before, the sort of gliding bird-like creatures, they're no longer at their perch or visible.
Love that.
Probably just tucked in for the night, right?
Mara, I want you to go ahead and roll plus calculating, but do it with advantage because you have the scanner and you prepped this.
Oh, no.
I did, didn't I?
And you can mark off one use of the scanner for this.
Mike, you couldn't have made it like a little bird. It had to be like a big...
Not after Lauren stole my crabs.
7, 8, 9. That's a 9.
A 9. Okay. So at a 9, you get to ask one question from the list. And it can be the same question for a more specific or immediately actionable answer, or it could be a different question.
I think because I specifically called it out that I was going to keep an eye on the presence of extraterrestrials around us, I think she does clock that two blips have moved. So yeah. I think it's going to be, what's my enemy's true position?
So I think maybe you look and you're like, oh, where did these two things go? And I think you Mike, where do we think these things would nest when they want to get cover or safety?
I think in a cave.
And do you think it's like a cave in the walls of the cliff here? Or what do you think that looks like?
Yeah, absolutely.
So I think you see, Mara, on the sensor that these two creatures are, the dots are very close together. And it seems like it's in the wall of the cliff back where you saw them originally. So it seems like they kind of must have ducked down into some kind of cave for cover.
Hmm.
But I think you see a larger blip on that radar. And it is maybe 50 feet laterally from your current position, but about 300 feet above your current position.
Great. I am going to alert everyone to the presence of something above us.
Hmm. Good, good, good.
How do you do that? And I think I'll give you one more thing on that. I think you see that the altitude number is descending rapidly.
So I think putting these two pieces of information together, I'm going to say something is approaching us very quickly. We need to find cover now. So I don't know if it's like I can see some caves or something on the side of the wall or what has to happen, but that's what I want to do. I'm going to do like the bird.
So I think you're looking for that, and I think we'll get to that, and you will have the chance to do that. But I think as you say that, what does anyone else react immediately before I get to what happens next?
I think when she says we need to find cover immediately, I act quick, right? Like, I don't sort of question Dr. Mara Belova.
Yeah.
And so I'll run to the nearest thing that would hide me from aerial sight.
Okay.
Like undercover of something, or even under one of the dog stegosauruses if we have to.
Yeah. So I think we see you all kind of frantically looking, and maybe you just start to move. And as that's happening, I think maybe you look up, Mara, and it looks like there's kind of a puff from the clouds above. It's almost like someone shot a massive gun down through the clouds toward the ground. But at the end of this cloud trail, sort of barreling down, you can see a red-orange shape, colored as if to blend in with the tinted sky of this planet. The creature that you see is around 20 feet long and has leathery skin studded with short spikes on the back of its head and neck. It has round bird-like eyes, but what appears to be a wide mouth filled with sharp fang-like teeth. And along its arms, which each end in a set of four hooked claws, are a pair of glider bat-like wings. So just much larger version of what you described on these creatures, Mike. And they are currently swept back as this creature dives down to the four of you. And that is where we'll end.
So fun.